What up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Black Expat Podcast. My name is Carl, and I'm excited to be rocking with you guys for yet another episode. So last night, I was in the bar, Arts and Crafts, bar that I own out here in Taiwan, and I had a wonderful conversation, and I definitely wanted to talk through it with you all, kind of unpack it and get your opinion and feedback on it, because I just thought it was really interesting. It's things that I've alluded to and I've talked about a little bit on other podcasts, but I haven't really thought as in depth as the conversation I had last night with the person who has is still a teacher here on the island, but has a different type of teaching job. And I don't want to go too into detail about that because I don't want to, you know, put his bag in jeopardy, but I do want to kind of unpack it, because right now, like, the state of expats, I talked about a little bit before, is in a very weird place, right? Because with the coronavirus, some of us literally can't go back to our home countries, whether that's America, Canada, wherever, because they're not letting people in. Like, non-essentially, they're not letting people in. And then people like me I'm a permanent resident here. If I leave Taiwan to go to a place like America, who isn't perception-wise handling the virus very well, I say perception-wise because I'm assuming everyone, the government, goes based off what they see in the news too, but not just them, the locals and all that. So locals could also put pressure on the government, like, nope, don't let any foreigners in, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to stop doing that. But perception-wise, like, if I go back home, say if I was like, you know what, it's a lot going on, I want to go back home to see my family for a month or two, could I get back into the country after that? And if I did get back, I'd have to be quarantined, and that affects my money, because the school I work for is like, oh, you can leave, but if you come back and you're quarantined and you don't have the virus, then you just don't get paid. So financially, there's a lot going into that, and a lot of expats don't qualify for a stimulus check, or they filed their taxes, but they don't qualify for it still. So, I mean, if you go back home and then there's literally not that many jobs available to get, unless you have, you know, a side hustle that you do online that'll manufacture you money. But if you really think about it, going back home is a financial risk as well. I mean, even if you have savings, you just don't know how things are going to go from one day to the next when things do open back up, how well they'll do, how jobs will be hiring moving forward, how unemployment will work out. And if you're not getting a stimulus check, going back home is super risky because you're going back home with $0 and zero earning potential, right? Because given the state of things, I'm sure there are businesses that are hiring for people who have a certain set of skills. I know there are banks and stuff that have like long call times, and they're trying to work to get people to help out in that area. But that's a lot, right? So a few things I want to unpack: the state of the expat now, and give a few examples. But I also kind of want to touch on the state of the expat now, and I also want to touch on some other things that kind of came up from the conversations that we were having about people's experiences, and state of the expat, and then what life will look like post the coronavirus. Because, I mean, I know you read articles that say, oh, now jobs are figuring out that, now people are figuring out that some jobs can be done from home. And some jobs are figuring out, some companies are figuring out that some jobs are non-essential to the company. So there's a balance there, right? It's one, yeah, people can work from home, but two, what does that do to the economy? And what does that do to jobs that, you know, we have? Because if it can be done from home, you have to think, some companies are like, okay, this can be done from home. How can I have a robot or a computer or pay someone little money to get this job done, right? So if companies already have these big buildings and they're not filling it with people, it's like, okay, we have to cut corners somewhere. I mean, there's a lot, just so much to unpack. But I want to start with the state of the expat here. So like you were saying, like, I am a permanent resident here and I work at a private school. And then even recently with the teachers that I supervise, if your temperature is over 37.5, the school is like, okay, stay at home. And, you know, when we all first heard it, you know, my first question as director is, okay, are we going to get paid for that? Is that something I'm going to be compensated for? And I initially thought, without digging deep into it, I was like, oh yeah, of course, if they don't want you to come to school, they're obviously going to pay you for it. But when that happened, the school was like, no. The first response was no. And I was like, well, let's unpack this together. For the safety of everyone, we're requesting that she stays home, but she can still come in even though you don't want her to. So I said, there's a gray area, because we get paid when we aren't at school by the hour, right? So essentially, long story short, if she didn't go to work that day, she would lose $100 US just for that day. And it may not seem like a lot, but we don't get paid $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a month. Like, we're in the most first, she's a second year teacher, between 24 to 26. So $100, like, that's a lot of money. Like, that's for one day of missing work, for not necessarily being sick. She was diagnosed with a common cold by a doctor. She went and got checked out because she has kids herself and a family. But it's still just a lot of money. But, you know, after talking to the school, they're like, okay, we'll figure something out, which essentially meant that they would pay her, but they had to figure out a way to legally still be able to pay her for not coming in. But I say that to say, like, as expats, if we don't get the stimulus from America, I'm talking specifically American expats, and then, you know, here, if something goes wrong, like, we lose out financially, like, it's hard. It's a tough decision to make. Like, what would you choose? Like, all right, I'm just gonna go back home, ride this wave. But then we already talked about the dangers of traveling back home, picking it up from being on flights, like, flights being super scarce back home even. So you would think they would be less expensive, but internationally, sometimes they're more expensive than what they usually are. So you're going to give up your job here, fly back home, lose money both ways, and then not have a guaranteed source of income when you get back home. Like, it's crazy. And even some jobs, like, I'm fortunate enough to work at a private school, so I'm salaried. So I get a salary guaranteed. If I do get the virus, God forbid, not me, but if someone does contract the virus from our school, then if it's because of the virus, they're still compensated. That's a government policy. School still has to pay me and whoever covers my classes. Because in Taiwan, if someone covers your classes, you have to pay them for it. There is no free work. They can volunteer, but usually people don't be like, yeah, I'll have a 30 hours of class this week and I'll do it all for free. Nah, sometimes, yeah, but nah, not for an extended period of time anyway. So, I mean, yeah, like, if you're out here because of the virus, then you get paid for that. But if you're not, then you don't. But at hourly pay school, so mine isn't an hourly pay. It's hourly pay only if you're absent for being sick or something like that. But you still get a salary. But for hourly paid schools where they literally get paid, let's say $20 an hour, they're not salary. It depends on how many hours they teach per week. If they miss any time, that's like, that's just money gone. Like, there is no, okay, you lost 3,000 NT today, but you still get the rest of your 60,000 salary, right? No, like, it's all gone. So for expats, it is a really, really, really scary thing. And some schools, there are some schools out in Taiwan where you're not supposed to, foreigners are not supposed to teach kindergarten and preschools students English. But a lot of places do it anyway. Everybody knows it happens. They cover it up really well. Most people want their kids, because, you know, the earlier you get kids around English and speaking and interacting with English, the easier they pick it up, you know, and they go into first grade, they have a good foundation, et cetera, et cetera. You know, if they get raided, they lose their job. It's like, all right, now what? The interesting thing that, as we were talking through this last night, was how it affects, like, Taiwan moving forward. Now, think about it. The way that America is handling it, perception-wise, the perception of America being this great country that have everything together, it's locked and loaded, it's the place you want to go, is kind of being tainted. Because on one end, one person came in and the other day and said, he talked to his Taiwanese friends and they said they like Donald Trump. They don't like Donald Trump, but they don't like him. He's okay. And they said he was okay because of what he said about Taiwan, what he says about Taiwan, like, oh, and the difference between Taiwan and China. He supports Taiwan. So from that perspective only, some Taiwanese, not all, but some Taiwanese people are okay with President Trump. Okay. They aren't as attached to the policies that affect Americans on a daily basis. They aren't American. So of course, if they see someone who's shouting out Taiwan and they don't do their due diligence or they aren't exposed to all the other stuff that he does, then of course their perception would be, oh, they cool. Same thing about Taiwan. If you don't know anything about how a president interacts, but you see them on TV saying, I support black people and civil rights and all that, you're going to be like, oh yeah, cool. I like them. I mess with them because he messes with us. But then you go and find out he like they be like burning stuff down and killing people. Like, oh no, that's messed up. But if that information doesn't happen all at the same time, then it'll skew your view. You know what I mean? So I mean, so that's kind of the thing we were talking about. It was like the perception of America is changing. Now, how does that affect us as Black expat or expat teachers? Right. So the reason why we're able to teach English and make such a good living is because, right, and enjoy the liberties that we have, and I'm struggling with the word now, but you know, we're able to enjoy that, those freedoms and those rights and that privilege. That's what I was looking for. The privilege of being Americans or Canadians or Australians, native English speaking countries, is because of the perception that people have toward English. Now, on the flip side, in America, specifically America, because I'm American, the flip side of that is English is a global language, right? It makes perfect sense for people to still want to learn English, regardless of if America is great or Canada or all those places. English is still a very dominant language worldwide. However, Taiwan is very different. It's much smaller. And what you hear a lot of parents saying is they want to send their kids abroad to the UK, to Canada, to America. Now, two out of three of those countries, perception-wise, aren't doing so hot. Something we talked about was, what if Taiwanese people start changing their minds, right? Which is very likely. Like, no, I don't want my student to study abroad, because the world just showed us that Taiwan is the safest place for them to be. And in order to get a good job in Taiwan and build up our economy and all that, we don't need that much English. So I'm going to pull my student out of his English program, which directly affects us, because the fewer students we have, the fewer jobs that are needed. Right. The flip side of that is, yes, globally and financially, it's still affecting Taiwan. Like, Taiwan is handling it very well. We have 400 something cases. More than half have been released, maybe one new case a day, but all imported cases. So not from within the island, but people that have come back from traveling. But at the same time, because the world is struggling, this is the world, we're a global pandemic. People are struggling financially. And what costs more? Sending students to these English classes. So if it comes down between saving money and English, Taiwanese people are going to save money however they can. And the first place to start would be with education, right? And again, everything is going online. So we may see, and we already have, an influx in online teaching, online tutoring. I personally don't like it. It's very hard to make connections, et cetera, et cetera. But there'll be an influx of that. But that's something you don't necessarily have to do in another country if you don't have residency. So for people who aren't like me, who aren't permanent residents, but have yearly resident visas and resident cards, this is a huge thing to think about. Because right now, and this is kind of connected to, you know, what life will be like after the pandemic, because right now it's all gravy. Like, it's fine because no one can go anywhere. So for this academic year, at least for expats that are teachers, there is a little security there. The insecurity comes from if your school gets shut down or if your center gets shut down because a virus case pops up and you're not at a school like mine, you don't get paid. But no, there is security in the fact that Taiwan is handling it very well. We're going on life as usual. Like, people are still going to work every day outside, et cetera, et cetera. But that's a huge fear for, you know, what ifs. There's a lot of what ifs for expats, especially in terms of where you get your money, how you can get your money, and if you can get back home. There are a lot of people out here, same way in America, immigrants all over the world, that live paycheck to paycheck. And if they're missing a paycheck, it's scary. It's like, I can't get back home. Their parents or family may be struggling back home too, and they can't afford to get them back because of how much everything is going up. Because think about it, people are in the house all the time now in America. If it's cold outside, that means the heat bill gonna be high. If it's hot outside, that means the AC bill gonna be high. The more food you're eating, God forbid, I mean, not God forbid, but if you have a big family, like, you're feeding people 3-4 times a day, all the snacks are gone. Like, it does have a huge economic impact on us, regardless of if we leave the house or not. It's huge. And the same thing for here in Taiwan. So for us, it's like, man, there's a lot that could happen. Like, anything could happen. And can we as expats be, how are we preparing for that? Like, it's scary. And the person I was talking to, someone was like, yes, we have this anxiety, but we don't know where to put it. But it's so much anxiety. Like I told you guys on my previous podcast, I've been having trouble sleeping. And I'm like, man, because there is a lot to think about. It's like, not only the bar, and it's not doing very well, in the sense of no one's coming out. and to bars because they are practicing social distancing. They're going to parks and drinking with their friends, spaced out, not in crowded areas where they could potentially contract it. Very smart. Again, can't be mad at that, but you can be at the same time if you own a bar business like us and you're not making money. But yeah, it's like it's you're scared. You're worried about that. Then you're worried about your family back at home. One of them contracts it and you haven't seen them in God knows how long. Then you're worried about your own financial situation. Can you get a stimulus check? And then, you know, preparing for the future because people's plans have changed. I know our school usually ends June 30th, now in July 14th, and our vacation is usually 6 weeks, now maybe 4 weeks. But then if something does come up, we got to make up classes, and that's no vacation, and we're working all year long. If schools get shut down, then that's 2 weeks of quote-unquote vacation, but you can't leave the house because you're quarantined. So it's like, man, you don't really get a break from anxiety. And I know we talked about like mental health of, you know, people back home, but for expats, it's the same thing. A lot of us are feeling or are thinking this and not unpacking it. And I think yesterday's conversation was so good for me to unpack because it was just good to hear, like not good to hear that another person had anxiety, obviously, but other people were processing and thinking about these things the same way that I were. And we're in similar positions as me, and we're going through these things. And the best thing that expat communities have now is the expat community. Like having one another as support systems, understanding that, you know, if something does happen, hey, I got your back, or letting people know, hey, something happens to me, here's what you need to do, give this to my mom, et cetera, et cetera. These are things you kind of have to do because when you're back home with your family, you don't have to worry about that. They have access to everything. But if you're out here and you don't have a lot of friends or you are by yourself, or something does come up, you need somebody that can step in and be there for you. And again, some people have it. Like, again, Patrick and I are very blessed and fortunate to have each other. But some people don't have that. They don't have people here that they can trust, that can depend on, that know their family, that have access to their passwords, that you want to trust with your ATM card. I mean, that's just a lot of things to think about, and it's on your mind. And it does give you anxiety, right? Because on one end, I would much rather be at home during a time like this and be around my family. As an expat, I could say yes. Why? Because I haven't spent an exorbitant, or I don't see them every day. So going back home and having 1, 2, 3 months, just being around my nieces and my nephews and my sisters and my mother and my father and my grandma, like that, I would love that. It'd be great for me. Like, oh, okay, cool. If I had money, guaranteed paycheck, and a job waiting when I was done. But that's not realistic, right? So, I mean, it does give you anxiety because as expats, you're worried about yourself and your family and all the what ifs that go into it. And you're not daily, you're not surrounded by your loved ones, your day ones, your family. And that's huge. Like that's a big deal. And it does make people anxious. And one of the things that we were talking about is how this connects is, all right, now post this pandemic, what will it look like? For me, from a hiring perspective, right? So now we usually hire teachers that are already living in different countries. So already in Canada and America, South Africa, etc. The US government is not giving out background checks right now. They're only like doing essential things because of the pandemic, right? In order to work in Taiwan, you need a criminal background check. But they aren't giving them out. A lot of governments aren't getting them out. What does that mean? So say one of our teachers decides to go back home to be closer to family because of the so many what ifs. We lose 2 or 3 teachers. That means it's harder for us to get teachers to work at the school that we're working at. Right? But if it's happening at our school, it's happening at other schools. One person came in and he was a Fulbright scholar. And he said Fulbright sent everybody home. They paid them their money up until July, but they were like, nope, go back home to America. There's a pandemic, your safety's first. So the schools that they were teaching at and places they were working with have vacancies. And yes, there are a bunch of foreigners who here now currently that still need jobs, and maybe those vacancies will be filled, but for how long, right? Like how long will that sustain itself? Because we can't say that there is enough foreigners here that could handle a semi-small exodus of foreign teachers. Because then there is a lot of vacancies and not that many people to fill them. And even if there are people to fill them, you have to think about it. If people know that you're struggling to find a teacher, they're not going to work as hard. That's just straight up. If they know you need them, they won't work as hard. They'll do their job. Like, oh, if you fire me, you have to find somebody to fill my space. And boop, not too many spaces to fill. And then does that boost up? And then if you have a shortage, that means they can ask for more money. But then how does Taiwan balance that? Well, they say, okay, we have a shortage of foreign teachers. Instead of either one, paying them more money, two, figuring out ways to give them, they can just say, three, cool, we're just going to cut the programs that foreign teachers were directly connected to. Because now we don't have a surplus of teachers like we've had in the past. We actually have a shortage, a teacher finding shortage. And then if you can't get teachers the legal way, a bunch of underground things are going to start happening at schools. For parents, you're like, nope, I still want my kids to have this education. I'm still willing to pay. The most successful schools will thrive and strive through it. The most non-successful ones, or the ones that don't have good management, won't. And it was weird because my school was like, hey, they were trying to get us to sign contracts in April. And I'm like, we've never signed contracts in April. I'm not going to commit in April to a full year yet either, even though I know I probably will stay. But I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen from one day to the next. But now we were talking about it yesterday. I'm like, man, that makes so much sense. Schools need security. They need to know, all right, teachers, I need to know that you're going to be here because we are looking down the line as to what could potentially happen. And what parents want to see is, hey, the same teachers are coming back. Because you got to think about it. What if a school does hire someone that flies on an airplane and comes to the school, undergoes 14-day quarantine, but still has the virus and infects the entire school? That's a huge risk, right? And as parents, yes, Taiwanese parents are different. Taiwanese people, they scare fast. They scare easily. And when they scare, they run. They know this school is tainted, not sending my kids here anymore. They have too many foreign teachers. Because think about it. Here's what affected our business, the bar, the worst. When the coronavirus first debuted, showed its pretty head, ugly head, the bar was actually doing okay. So like, because, you know, during that time, they had said, all right, so for 2 weeks, this is before anyone other countries or most of the other countries weren't doing anything. Taiwan shut the island down or shut us down from going to work and had us quarantine and stuff in February. February 1st, they announced it because they were like, nope, pandemic. We've been through SARS. We finna get, you know, ahead of this. But people were still coming out to the bar. People were coming back from travels. They were quarantining and still hanging out. So we still got foot traffic. So people were walking by. People would come from Taipei down to where we are. We were doing okay. Not good. Not in profit. Don't get me wrong. But doing okay. And then one day, actually, a person from the Chamber of Commerce, the United States Chamber, the U.S., I think is the Foreign Chamber of Commerce. I forget the name, but they're from America. The Chamber of Commerce person that we knew, they were hosting an event at our bar. And then the person, the guy was like, oh, I can't make it out. And me and Patrick were like jokingly, oh, man, I hope we ain't got the coronavirus, you know, because he didn't give a reason to say, hey, I'm not coming. Someone else will be there in my place. And it turns out that he had the virus, and he was like 50-year-old man. And we saw it in the newspapers, like 50-year-old foreigner got the virus because he hosted guests from some foreign country in January, and they had it, and then he got it, and then he was quarantined. Now, when this hit the news, think about it. Taiwan is a very small island, 24 million people. The thing was, schools, people are like, oh, no. It was just, by that time, it was maybe 50 Taiwanese had it. I remember it exactly. He was the 50th or 51st. He was the first foreigner. After that, all bars and places where foreigners frequented were pretty much vacated. And it wasn't just the Taiwanese people not showing up to these places. It was the foreigners too. They were taking extra precautions. Some people had their job saying, hey, you need to not be going to X, Y, and Z places, right? You need to stay within this area. So they weren't traveling outside of that area. Some people were just like, nope, a foreigner got it. And a lot of us, because it was right around Chinese New Year, Patrick and I didn't, thankfully. A lot of us traveled during that time. So a lot of people were getting it from different, you know, from the flight patterns and interacting with different people on flights. And a lot of Asian people were traveling, specifically from China, who contracted the virus and was just spreading everywhere, you know. And foreigners were afraid of foreigners. It wasn't said, it wasn't spoken. But as bar owners and as, you know, just as expats and talking to other people, it was very clear. It was evident. You could see it. They're like, nope, one foreigner got it. Now we're suspicious of all foreigners. And this was, and immediately, it was like the next day, bar was empty. Our regulars weren't coming in. New people weren't coming in. We had reservations. We had big events, like big events we've been planning for months that people had at the bar and wanted to do at the bar that were just canceled. like to just cancel them. And we're like, man, but it just took one, and I think still to this day, maybe one or two foreigners got it. But still the perception is that never left the Taiwanese mind and also the foreign mind. They were like, nope, too risky. Instead of going to these bars, and the good and bad thing about Taiwan is you can drink outside in public and it's fine. 7-Elevens have many different types of beer and alcohol. You can just buy it, mix drinks at your own house. Also, shout out to Patrick. If you haven't already, follow his IG page, Prolific. He teaches, he can be your online bartender. You can hire him, create a Zoom, FaceTime, whatever you want to do. He'll teach you how to make 5 to 10 drinks. He'll tell you what ingredients to make sure you have at your home. Online virtual happy hour with your bartender. And it's free for him to do it. All we ask, or all I ask, he's not asking, I am, tip your bartender. But yeah, really cool he's been doing that. That's something that's come out of this is virtual bartending. And we just so happen to own a bar and we know how to mix drinks. And Patrick, that is his specialty. So definitely check that out if you haven't already. Prolific. You can find him on my Instagram page too. I tag him in a lot of stuff. So, but yeah, like, yeah, you could just see it and it was instantaneous. And again, and Patrick and I were always torn. It was like, man, it's such a good thing foreigners are taking precaution to keep the island safe. It's not just the locals. We're in this together. We live here too. But again, on the backside, it's like, damn, this really kind of fucks up our money, right? Like it just does. And again, we don't get small business loan bailouts here. Like if anybody want to donate their stimulus check to us paying rent, you can definitely do that. Or give us a part of your small business loan. All we need is like $10,000. We good. But anyway, click the link in the description for donations for The Haven. But yeah, I mean, it was in a day. Like it was so fast. And it's still kind of been carrying on. Like slowly but surely, people are starting to leak out. And certain places are flourishing. Like we just added a dartboard and done some other cool things in the bar. But man, like it was just like that, like a blink of an eye, everything changed. So like when we say like, all right, after the virus, what is it gonna look like? What will it look like? And what we talked about last night is we have to start preparing. I think I did talk about this in a previous podcast. People are like, oh, if you don't come out of this lockdown with like a hobby or a side hustle, you're not doing it right. And I think at the beginning, like we kind of talked through yesterday, when people thought the lockdown would be for maybe 2 weeks, you know, because of how people were, specifically the president was talking, they're like, oh, okay, nah, man, 2 weeks, I deserve some downtime. And I 100% agree. When Taiwan shut us down for 2 weeks, I didn't develop a side hustle. I didn't do anything extra. I rested because I just didn't even know when you anticipate a vacation, you plan to do things. So it's, you're not really resting because like, this is my rest time, but you're spending your rest time doing stuff that you don't get to do because you're always working, right? So a vacation while you are chilling, you're still doing stuff. But that 2 weeks, I just sat down. I talked to Patrick. I contacted family. I exercised a lot more. I was in the gym, which was a habit I developed and I'm still keeping going now. So, I mean, I was resting. So I was with it. People was like, yes, if you're the kind of person that can't sit down, then you want to get up and develop these hobbies and do stuff you couldn't do, do it. But also I was okay with, I don't want to do nothing. I just want to sit my ass down and chill and actually, you know, engage with my family and find out what's going on, talk to my kids about what's going on, talk to my best friends and unpack things we always put on the back burner. I'm with that too. But then he brought up a different point. Now it's been extended. It's going to be months. And as expats, he's like, I have to have a plan B. He doesn't work at a private school like me. He's like, at any point in time, they can be like, wash my hands of you, I'm gone. So yeah, you got savings, but you need to have like a fallback. And it's like, if you don't want to go back to America, which he doesn't, he can, but he doesn't in particular, then it's like, you need to have something else to fall back on. A guaranteed revenue stream, which you can always tutor on the side, online tutoring, if she does. But then something else that brings in the big bacon, you know? So it's like, all right, after this pandemic, what is the plan? What are you working toward? How are you going to make changes for yourself? And it does have to be something big, like, I'm going to change my career. I'm going to apply for this job. I'm going to build this. No, but like really spending this time to observe how the world is changing, how everything was impacted, like what's really going on, observing the landscape and how companies are going to change their policies and what they do and how they do it. essential versus non-essential, like I talked about before. But then, like, all right, planning for yourself. If you did have people who do have ideas or did have ideas about creating and building something and doing some shit, do it. Right now, is a lot of people are on social media, a lot of people aren't. They're replacing work with TV, but they eventually get on. Like, if you do have something that you want to put out there, that you want to get out there, now is a good time to do it and get into the habit of doing it during a time when, once you go back to work, it fits into your schedule. Like for me, that was exercising. I've tried to do it in the afternoon, but I was like, nope, don't fit my work schedule. I got to get up and I had to get in the gym by 7 o'clock, 7 in the morning. Even when I was on my break and even when he was on lockdown, I was in the gym. I had to put that habit. Is something's going to healthy for me way down the line from now into forever. So for me anyway, so definitely that was something I wanted to do. But yeah, like, we got to, what's the plan after this? And observing how it's affecting you now and the impact it had and making decisions about what you want and working toward that, doing all the research that you don't really get time to when you're working on projects and all that. And a lot of us are still working from home, and not me in particular, but people are still working from home. So it's not like you're completely detached, but you do have more time to yourself, right? More time to look at yourself, to observe yourself. And if you like what you see and you like where you're going, then you're good. But if you don't, it's okay to sit down and start writing things down, start making plans, start connecting with people, start networking. It's a great time to network. People got time now. Oh, I ain't got no time. I'm too busy. I'm going out. I'm in these streets. Nah, man, you at home on the couch. I need you to turn off the TV for a sec. I need us to wrap a taste. You know what I mean? And that's, for us, like, it's just a different type of preparation. Like, you know me, I've always wanted to get, you guys, I hope if you've been listening, you know me, always wanted to get into voice acting. Always want to get into voice acting. I want to make this podcast something where I'm able to do what I did before, travel around to different places and get more interviews. Now I'm looking at, all right, I can do Zoom interviews with people and record the audio, put it on the podcast. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. You know what I mean? So, and I want to also do interviews of people back home and get their perspective about what they're going through and how they're experiencing it and so on and so forth. So, man, I mean, there's so much opportunity out there for people. And I really want to, I just want to make sure that me personally, I'm not as an expat away from my family and having a family member that did contract the virus and is fighting for his life, that I'm keeping myself in a healthy mental place, but also understanding that I am in an unhealthy mental place, the anxiety part, right? Like, you can't, as much as I can try to say I'll stay positive and all that, I do have to, you kind of have to accept that, yeah, you are anxious right now. There is a lot on your mind. It is hard for you right now. You have to embrace that and understand that and not try to deny it and push it down. Like, no, openly talking about it yesterday was great. He's like, man, I'm anxious. I'm like, man, me too. I haven't been able to sleep very well. Like, I sleep for about 3-4 hours and I'm a brain just thinking. Don't even know what I'm thinking about. Just thinking about stuff. You know what I mean? Family, friends, good friends. Like, I don't know what's going on with them. I don't talk to them all the time. I'm not off, so I can't sit down and just dedicate hours of time to them because I am busy. I still work 7 days a week. So, I mean, there's a lot in that. There's a lot that goes into that. So the state of the expat, when I first talked about it, it was on a very, you know, top level. Just, oh, this is what's going on. Like, we're fine. But there's levels to it. Like, there's a lot more to unpack. And I hope that I just did unpack about some of the things that we're going through, what we're thinking about, our experience here on the island of Taiwan, but also, man, the future. Like, what does it hold? When will expats be able to openly return home? And not just return home, but feel safe returning home, right? Because even if I go back, I still, if I'm on any airplane around anyone else, I don't want to see my mom or my sisters or them babies until I quarantine myself for 2 weeks. But shoot, I got to pay for a hotel for 2 weeks. And I ain't trying to stay in a bad hotel. I want to stay in a good one, a clean one. But that's expensive. The flight ticket, then the hotel. Like, it's a lot. And then what does that look like after that? Are people going to be afraid to travel after this? Will travel ever look the same? I mean, for business and essential things, yeah. Those people are going to travel for their companies and their businesses. But what if they don't want to? Like, what if the world needs to shut it down for 6 months? Like, no, we don't need no non-essential travel going on, baby. like stay in y'all home countries. And if you do visit our country, we're gonna quarantine you for 14 days. That pushes back a lot of things. So the good thing is technology is booming. So a lot of things can go online. But the bad news is it's trying to navigate that and figure that part out. So that's something that, you know, if you haven't unpacked, you need a chance to unpack. You should definitely, you know, make a point and go through that. But thanks for rocking with me couldn't get that sentence out. Thanks for rocking with me today, y'all. Thank you for the questions and comments and feedback. I am going to dedicate another podcast next week to answering a lot of those questions. But for this particular podcast, I do want your feedback, your thoughts. You can either comment it or do what you've always done. Email me, IG message me, all that. I'm Carl, the Black Expat. We out, chill.